Today on Family Talk.
Hello again, everyone. This is Dr. Meg Meeker coming to you from the International Christian Retail Show in Orlando, Florida, where it's about 100 degrees outside and about 50 degrees inside. I'm joined by a man today who I've come to really respect. I've read work that he has written. He has a number of different books and articles. He works for Lifeway as the president of Lifeway Research and lives in Nashville, Tennessee. His name is Dr. Ed Stetzer. He is a well-known research author and speaker. Specifically, Dr. Stetzer has done extensive research on the church and the many studies which seem to indicate that droves of people are fleeing Christianity. And Dr. Stetzer, may I call you Ed?
You sure may. I'd love you to.
You know, I am so glad you're here. I'm an optimistic person. I know that we win in the end as a Christian, and I think that's one of the most compelling reasons to believe in Christianity is because Jesus is alive. But, you know, all of the things that we hear about the church and about Christianity is that kids aren't believing and many people are walking away from the faith and we're doing everything wrong in churches and Christians are kind of crazy. A, we're branded that way by very meticulously by the media.
Very much.
And I think that we're believing in the pressure that we have around us. But you're here to tell us a very different story, aren't you, as a researcher? And that's what I love. I love knowing that numbers support good stuff.
Good deal. Well, let me just say, math is hard, but math is worth doing. Facts are our friends, and so we want to make sure we talk about the current reality. But I don't have like a set of research that's contrary to all other professional researchers. What I'm saying is there's no real researcher in the United States who says the church is dying. Not a single one anywhere.
Well, where is this coming from?
It's coming from pop culture. It's coming from evangelicals who want to kind of motivate people to mission and say, look, the church is dying. Everyone's leaving.
Hurry up.
But statistically, it's just not. And so what we find, for example, the Pew data just came out. Everyone talked about it, right? You referenced the articles I wrote in CNN, Washington Post, USA Today. The Pew data found that there were more evangelicals 7 years later than there were at the beginning of their study. You didn't see that. You saw, you know, the church is dying. And then you got all these people writing books and try to motivate Christians to live for Jesus. And they say, look, the church is dying. Somebody's got to live for Jesus. Well, I agree with the last part. Just no real researcher anywhere believes that the church is dying. Now, are there challenges? Absolutely. Mainline Protestantism is in free fall statistically, the old line denominations. Evangelicalism is flat, maybe peaked in the 80s. And so I'm not excited about that. I want to see more men and women hearing the gospel. I want to see lives changed. But the reality is, you know, the Assemblies of God, they just celebrated their 25th year of consecutive growth. Yeah, 25 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And so a remarkable milestone. Others are not. Southern Baptists are declining. But the fastest growth is in non-denominational evangelicals, up 400% if we baseline it from 1972 to 1976.
Why?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is denominations are losing their appeal to a lot of people.
Why?
And, I think partly denominations have sort of written their own perception. Denominations have become known, some of them, more for what they're against than for what they're for. So people often prefer a no-brand name that doesn't carry with it some of the challenges. And so that's why non-denominational evangelicalism is growing so quickly. Mm-hmm. My guess is a lot of our listeners here who are going to be predominantly evangelical, well, if they're predominantly evangelical, about a third of them now, a little less than a third, go to non-denominational churches.
Right.
50 years ago, that wasn't the case.
Didn't you even say in one of your articles that over 25% of Catholics will claim they're evangelical?
I wrote an article for the Washington Post called the Evangelicalization
yes.
of American Christianity.
Yes.
And in there, now it's a half of all Christians in the United States who self-identify as Christians, a half of them identify in a way that researchers would consider them to be evangelicals. Use words like being born again, mm-hmm. being evangelical, fundamentalist, or other things like that. So we do find, for example, the Canadian Evangelical Fellowship, when they survey Canadians, they find a significant chunk of the evangelical people answer questions like evangelicals are Roman Catholics. And so I think there's certainly a connection. We are becoming more driven by those
things. Is that because those Roman Catholics are going to non-denom churches or because the Catholic Church is becoming more evangelical?
Yeah, it's probably the former more than the latter. You know, I'm at Evangelical Church and we have people in our church who were nominal Catholics who go to our church, but still called themselves Catholics, including one person who was recently, you know, baptized and became a member of our church, but still refers to herself as a Roman Catholic. I grew up Roman Catholic outside of New York City on Long Island. And I mean, there's a cultural identity. I was Irish Catholic. There's a cultural identity that a lot of people keep. But I think the big trends are that mainline Protestantism is just hemorrhaging. Okay, but using the General Social Survey, there are more evangelicals now than there were in 1972, peaked in the 80s. But the big growing trend
raw
is secular people.
Percent?
A percent of the population. Yeah, okay. Percent of the population from 1972 to today.
So it would be raw numbers
more.
As well.
Well, it's going to be both, but it's more important when it's also percent of the population.
Exactly.
Because
yeah.
The Pew numbers had the raw numbers of evangelicals up, but a slight dip in the percentage of the population. So I'm not happy with how we're doing, but I think everyone running around with the sky is falling because crises sell books, but crises don't fix problems.
But if you listen to mainstream news shows,
yep.
Any news show, really, and you were a non-American, and you would come and you listen for 1 week and you flipped all of the channels, you would believe that we are living in an overwhelmingly secular culture where people don't believe in Christ.
That's
is
right.
that true? Is that a true perception?
Well, it depends on how you define the terms. Okay, so 70 to 75% of Americans call themselves Christians. But Meg, we don't define Christian in our world the same way that the rest of the world does.
So by Christian, they mean not Jewish.
Or you're right, not Jewish, or they don't want to be
Muslim.
An atheist or something like that. So about half of America defines itself as Christian, but it's not necessarily a meaningful part of that they order their lives around. They're cultural Christians or nominal Christians. About 25% of America call themselves Christians, and it's a convictional expression to them. And they sort of plan
their
lives.
They follow Christ.
We would want to nuance that not everyone in there is going to be an evangelical. Not everyone in there is going to be believe maybe, but they call themselves Christians, and it's a conviction. They plan who they marry around it. They plan what they do on the weekends.
It's meaningful.
Yeah, so it's meaningful. I call it convictional in the article I wrote in USA Today. It's convictional to them. And so it's important to note. So are we a secular society? Well, 25% of society says it's not Christian. That's about half secular, about half other religions. 50% are nominally Christian, and about 25% call themselves Christian, and it's meaningful. I would say, I mean, that's a lot of secularism there, because the 50% who call themselves Christians, but it's not necessarily something they order lives around, that 50% tends to think more like the secular people, though they call themselves Christians. They're spiritual, but not religious.
So what's the population in the U.S.? About 300 million?
Yeah, it depends on who's counting.
We're looking at maybe 70 million people in America.
Typically say about 100 million evangelicals.
Okay.
But again, that's of belief. There are a lot of people who are evangelicals who say, like Catholics do, right? So people say, well, I'm a Catholic. I haven't been to church in 20 years. A lot of evangelicals in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, there are more Baptists than there are people in Texas. A lot of people say they're Christians, but haven't been in a long time.
Right.
So when you get down to it, about 10 to 12% of the U.S. population is an active evangelical. Actually, according to the Pew study, or excuse me, the General Social Survey, about 1 in 8 Americans is an active church-going evangelical.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. But here's the good news that I think, that 50% of Americans call themselves a Christian, but only about half in a meaningful way.
Let me say this. 50% calls us a Christian, and it's another 25%. So 75% or so, 77% say they're Christian.
Right.
So two-thirds of those, or 50% of the whole, I know the numbers get, we're throwing them around quickly.
So two-thirds of Americans identify themselves as Christian.
Yeah, two-thirds of Americans identify
but
themselves
as Christian. But only 25% of that is in a meaningful way. But
exactly.
See, here's the good news to me. You've got that 50% identifying themselves as Christian, who are nominally Christian, who are open.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who can be evangelized.
That's right.
Who you have a starting ground for them. And I think that's wonderful. At least they're not calling themselves atheists.
Yeah.
What's the percent of true atheists in the country who say, I'm an atheist?
Yeah, it depends on who you ask. But typically, you know, the Baylor study, which is kind of, it's called What Americans Believe, was a great study. And what they said.
When was that done? Sorry.
Oh, gosh, 2 or 3 years ago now?
Yeah.
I just talked to Byron Johnson at the Institute of Study of Religion there. They say there's not been a huge growth in the number of atheists. So maybe 4 to 6% atheists. What's really growing is people that we call the nuns. Now, that's not the nice Catholic
N-O-N-E.
Ladies who that. N-O-N-E-S, who are none of the above. a lot of people don't want to be atheists because atheists don't have a good reputation.
Right.
Right? Yeah, I mean, we talk about Christians not have a good reputation. Atheists have a bad
worse.
Reputation. Exactly.
They're mean.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly. Yeah. That's the perception of people. And I know some atheists who are not that, and you would as well. But what we find is that atheism is not exploding, but what's really growing is just secular people who don't call themselves Christians, but who just kind of have a secular worldview, and that's the way they live. Now, we're a lot better at reaching nominal Christians than we are secular people.
Yeah. Because they're an easier sell.
Exactly.
And that's what I was saying is very, very optimistic. I work with a lot of Catholic radio, and my personal experience, I don't know if it's legitimate, but is that there are a number of growing charismatic Catholics who are very, very on fire for their faith and for Christ, and I think that's terrific. Let's just for a minute get back and talk about the non-denominational church and the growth of that. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yes. It's both a good thing and a bad thing. And part of the reason it's a bad thing is that there's sometimes no connection to others that we can... If there's a difficulty, there's no one to go to, there's no partnership. And the other thing, too, is I believe in denominations. I wrote the cover story for Christianity Today on denominations, so I believe in denominations. I'm not anti them. But I would say that non-denominationalism is, in a sense, people exercising kind of a missional focus. They want to reach people for Jesus. They feel maybe sometimes they're held back in their denominational tradition. And so I'm for non-denominational churches. I speak at non-denominational churches all the time. I appreciate and I love them. I work with non-denominational networks. I think the question we have to ask is, we still need to partner together for the Great Commission somehow. Because Jesus said to the church, go make disciples of all nations. Well, that church in Peoria can't make disciples of all nations. So if we didn't have denominations, we'd probably create them so we can do some of these things together.
Here is my concern, is that a non-denom has the potential for getting off track really easily because they don't have a history of the tenets of their faith supported century after century after century, like, Lutherans or Catholics or Baptists.
Yeah.
There aren't a set of rules, if you will, that say this is how you maintain your identity as one of us, and this identity has withstood the test of time. That's even hard to verbalize because I've feel kind of rude in saying that, but I think it's important.
I don't think it's rude. I think it makes sense. Here's what I would say, and it's probably important to note, that there's a whole lot of denominations that have had those documents and those histories that today we don't see a whole lot of what we would consider a clear gospel proclamation, right? So we look at Anglicanism, and we see the 39 articles, right? And the Anglican Church in North America says we're going to be built on that. They're evangelical and others, other traditionalists. But then the Episcopal Church has the same 39 articles, and we would see those things very differently. So a history and documents don't guarantee orthodoxy.
Yes.
And I would say that probably, we're both evangelicals, but probably non-denominational evangelicals would look more like we believe than some of the mainline denominations that have the Westminster, Heidelberg Confession, all these different things, the 39 articles. And a lot of those we would look at and say, man, they've lost their way. Mm-hmm. And so non-denominational evangelicals tend to be more evangelical, more conservative, so they're not dissimilar. But of course, there are outliers. There's a few that have changed their beliefs, and there's no structure to bring them back in,
right?
Which there would be in some denominations.
But not just structure to bring them back in, but structure to keep them sharp and to keep them holding to the tenets of their faith. For instance, I think about, what we're going through in our culture right now and the whole divide over the homosexuality. Catholics can say, the Pope says and the Catechism says, these are the beliefs of the Catholic Church. I adhere to the beliefs of the Catholic Church. So therefore, I'm having a conflict because I want to believe this way, but my faith says I don't believe this way. If you don't have those clear tenets that have withstood the test of time, isn't there a greater likelihood that you're going to start to mold to the culture?
It's a fair question. And that's, I think, part of the appeal to that some evangelicals even have towards Catholicism, I think, is this connection. But what I would say is that historically, again, I mean, let's go back to the Heidelberg Catechism, the Westminster Confession of Faith, that Presbyterians and Reformed have held. Well, we can find whole denominations that have changed their view on LGBT issues that say they hold to those confessions and those catechisms, and whole denominations that haven't changed their views. So I'm with you. I do think, and that's why I'm part of a denomination. denomination. So I'm not arguing for that. Yeah. I'm actively part of a denomination. But in being part of that denomination, I'm also aware that denominational affiliation alone, documents alone, do not guarantee orthodoxy. A vibrant faith and an engagement in the Word of God that's passed on from generation to generation does. And that can be inside denominations or outside.
Will non-denominational churches then be around in 300 years?
300 years. That's a great question. If you would have asked anyone 300 years ago if Baptists and Methodists would have been around, they all would have said no.
Really?
Yeah, because, I mean, you don't see Baptists and Methodists as serious players, if you will, until, say, 1795 to 1810. There's a book by Finkin Stark called The Churching of America, Winners and Losers in America's Religious Economy. Not the title that, you know, sounds exciting. But, I mean, you think about it. 300 years ago, it was Anglicans and Presbyterians and Congregationalists who were the big denominations. And early in the U.S. history, the founding of the U.S. history, we weren't talking about Baptists and Methodists. Well, then you find 100 years later, I mean, who's talking about Congregationalists today? I mean, they were everything.
Right.
And now, Baptists and Methodists were for a while, and now it's becoming more and more non-denominational. We didn't even have Pentecostal charismatic churches 150 years ago. Now, the Pentecostal charismatic movement is the fastest growing movement in the history of global Christianity.
Why?
Yeah, well, I think partly because they're answering questions people are asking. They have a vibrant faith that they want to pass on and share with others. And so, what's it going to look like in 300 years? Well, first, I'm going to be with the Lord then, and so I'm going to let someone else worry
about
that.
And maybe we'll all be there.
Maybe we'll all be there. Well, I think all of us listening now,
yeah,
who are followers of Christ, will be. But yeah, so I don't know, but I know that I know Jesus is faithful. I know he loves his church. I know the Spirit's still at work in the church, and I want to stay obedient to the Word of God and follow the work of the Spirit in the church.
Well, certainly the non-denom church is biblical.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's getting us toward heaven, but I do wonder if because we're humans, because we're people, there are quote-unquote fads that come and go. I'm not saying a non-denominational church is a fad, but we see shifting trends all the time.
Yeah, no question. I mean, is congregationalism a fad? I mean, we
yes.
look at all
yeah.
of New England.
I mean,
yeah, you know, I
exactly,
know what you mean, but
as yeah.
point, all of New England was congregationalist,
yes.
and that all went away, and
exactly.
many of them
That's
became Unitarians.
That's what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Exactly.
Yes, yes,
exactly.
They ebb and they flow. Is the Christian church in America healthy?
No, I wouldn't say it's healthy. I would say, and there are wings of it that are more healthy than others. Mainline Protestantism is in serious trouble.
Why?
There are more than one reason. Some of it's demographic. They're not having kids like they used to. Some of it's theological. They've moved away from what historically they held, and I think they had this desire that, well, if we kind of changed our views to be perceived as more tolerant, that all the people who left would rush in and come back, and they didn't.
Wow.
And so it's collapsing, mainline Protestantism is. Evangelicalism, I don't think evangelicalism is healthy. There are healthy segments of evangelicalism. There are healthy churches. But I think as a whole, evangelicalism needs a clearer focus on what the gospel is, needs to get more faithfully and fruitfully on mission. So I think there's a lot still to be done. Did you say healthy? No. Segments, yes.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean it's dying.
Okay.
Nobody thinks yeah. that it's dying.
No,
who's
the
a real
church
researcher.
Is not. Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
The church is not dying, and you know the health of the church. We can always do better, and always do better because the church is inhabited by very, very broken people.
Yeah, you like me. Yep.
Are
for sure.
Are we doing a good enough job in general teaching the scriptures to our children?
No, not at all. I think that's part of the challenge, is that we need a word-driven, a word-centered church where the faith is passed on. Now, there are some urban legends. You may have heard that 86% of evangelical youth drop out of church after high school, never to return. That's not a real stat. The people who put out that stat retracted it. They said they're sorry. The news agency that published it retracted the story, said they're sorry. But my guess is half your audience is hearing that and saying, oh, 86% drop mm-hmm. out. They don't. Well, actually, the most recent study is from the University of Southern California, published in Oxford University Press. So these are not Christian types like me, you know,
yeah.
trying to point people to Jesus. And they said that evangelicals keep about 2/3 of the next generation. It's a multi-decadal study.
So let's restate that
yeah.
for every parent listening there, that if you're an evangelical parent,
yes.
mom and dad,
yep.
I assume, in a home, that you have 2/3 chance that your child is going to stay an evangelical.
Yeah. And
is that correct?
It gets higher if both parents are married and going to church together. I believe
okay.
it's up to 70%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's great news
yeah.
for all the worried parents out there.
Well, and I think what's happening is, you know, I have 3 daughters, so pray for me. and I love my girls.
Yeah.
But if I spent my life telling them, hey, listen, another stat is that 94% drop out. If I said, girls, 94% of you who go off to college, you're going to hear this is all a bunch of bunk and you're going to leave the faith. We're teaching our kids a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So 94% of, I don't want to get
no,
this
No, that's
right.
a fake stat.
Good.
So both
okay.
86% and 94% are not real stats. Nobody anywhere has ever said that.
Of kids that go off to college, drop away from
their
faith.
Yeah, exactly.
Those
but,
are fake.
But those are fake stats. People say, well, how do you know they're fake stats? Because I know the people who do that and they're really sorry.
But it's true. And, you know, unfortunately, with the internet and the access to all sorts of information, there's so much bad information.
It really is.
And,
and let me
myths
jump in too.
That are
people,
circulating.
Because people want them. You've got a media that wants to say it's true.
Yeah.
And you've got Christians that want to use it to motivate other Christians. And that is a match that leads to really bad statistics.
We've been listening to Dr. Ed Stetzer here on Family Talk, and I know there were a lot of numbers and statistics flying around in this interview, but let me tell you that remembering the exact numbers of particular denominations isn't the important part of this interview.
Ryan, the reason we wanted to share this program with our listeners is so they'll be able to respond wisely to those voices in the culture that claim Christianity is dying.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And there are a lot of them today that are out there. Others are saying that Christians are divorcing at the same rate as the general population. Honestly, that's simply not true. When you look at the data, it shows that life based on biblical principles works. Marriages that have Christ at the center and where both partners are committed to honoring Him and respecting one another are the most stable relationships in the society. And that's also the best environment in which to raise healthy and confident kids who embrace the faith and pass it on to the next generation. In other words, the things that we've been trying to teach and exhort people about for many years really do work.
They do, Dad. And I want to take a few minutes to invite our listeners to stand with us. You know, here at Family Talk, we have so many resources that can help you and your family live biblically. And we can offer these resources because of the many faithful listeners who support us every month. With their donations, we can actually give away our resources. Mm-hmm. And your donation of any amount helps us help other parents and couples to create Christ-centered homes. And now through the end of the year, every donation we receive will have double the impact. Friends of the Ministry have offered a generous matching grant, so every single dollar you give helps twice as many families. You can give today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by clicking the tab at drjamesdobson.org. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time for the conclusion of our interview with Dr. Ed Stetzer. That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
There's a very special gift that men and women in their 50s, 60s, and 70s have to offer the people they come in contact with.
Dr. James Dobson for Family Talk.
That gift is wisdom, gleaned from years of experience. It's wisdom that can encourage and build up and offer hope in troubled times. In days gone by, extended families lived together in the same house, young and old alike. People were able to get fresh perspectives just by hashing out the events of the day at the dinner table. But in today's mobile society, most of us live away from our families, and this valuable interaction between generations is lacking. If you're getting up in years, I'd urge you to find someone younger in your life that you could befriend. That frustrated young mother of a toddler down the street might love to have an older woman come by for coffee, to listen and to say, "That's normal. I remember when I felt just that way." The young man in the office down the hall needs to hear from someone older and wiser, "You're doing a good job. Keep up the good work." If you're younger, seek out someone older and wiser at work or in your neighborhood or at church and ask for their advice. You'll find that wisdom is a precious gift, and sharing it benefits both the giver and the receiver.
Who doesn't want to be encouraged to make their marriage stronger? Our new Family Talk iPhone app is designed especially to uplift your marriage in a way that makes it easy for both husbands and wives to find great resources. Loaded with articles, broadcasts, and videos, the new Family Talk app will provide you practical tips on making your marriage all it can be. The customized Family Talk app tailors content around where you are in life. Whether you're a husband, wife, dad, or mom, the Family Talk app will provide you with daily inspiration to strengthen your marriage and invest into the lives of your children. The app also allows you to set personal reminders around life's greatest priorities, your faith and family. Go to drjamesdobson.org/app. Again, that's drjamesdobson.org/app to download your free customized Family Talk app today.